Okay, now we're going to have our first of three bonus lectures for the course. So this is material that's not covered in the textbook. It's from another source. And it's ideas that are relevant to measure theory, and they shed some light on measure theory, but from a different point of view, namely the point of view of functional analysis. Okay, so in your real analysis class, for example, Math 4111, which you had last semester, you studied functions of several variables, and you no doubt noticed many analogies with one variable theory. And the arguments generally involved clever use of the triangle inequality. For functions of one variable, the triangle inequality was for absolute value. For functions of several variables, the inequality was for the norm. In this section, we formalize a general context in which we may do analysis anytime we have a reasonable notion of calculating distance. Such a structure will be called a metric. So, definition. A metric space is a pair, capital X comma rho, where capital X is a set, and rho is a function from X cross X to the non-negative reals. And this is a function satisfying one for all X, Y, and capital X. Rho of X, Y equals rho of Y, X, so rho is symmetric in the two variables. Number two, rho of x, y equals zero if and only if x equals y. And number three, for all x, y, and z, rho of x, y is less than or equal to rho of x, z plus rho of z, y. So number three is, of course, the triangle inequality. The function rho is called a metric on x. Example, the pair, the reals, comma, rho, where rho of x, y is absolute value, x minus y is a metric space. So this is the usual notion of distance on the reals. Each of the properties required of a metric is a restatement of familiar facts that you already know. The pair RK, comma rho, where RK is k-dimensional Euclidean space and rho of xy is the norm of x minus y is a metric space. And it's easy for you to verify each of the properties required of a metric in this case also. So this example presents familiar metrics on two familiar spaces, namely R1 and RK. Now we'll look at some new examples. So now look at R2 comma rho, where rho of xy is the maximum of absolute x1 minus y1 comma absolute value x2 minus y2. This is a metric space. Only the triangle inequality is not trivial to verify, but if you think about it a moment, it just reduces to the triangle inequality on R1. The pair real numbers comma mu, where mu of xy equals 1 if x is not equal to y and 0 if x is equal to y is also a metric space. This is a pretty trivial metric. Checking the triangle inequality reduces to seeing that if x is not equal to y, then either x is not equal to z or y is not equal to z. Next example, let capital X denote the space of continuous functions on the interval 0, 1. If f and g are at x, then let rho of fg be the supremum for t and 0, 1 of absolute f of t minus g of t. Then this pair x comma rho is a metric space. The first two properties of a metric are obvious. The triangle inequality reduces to the triangle inequality for real numbers. This example is a dramatic new departure from the analysis you've done in the past, but now this capital X is a very large space. In fact, it's infinite dimensional in a certain sense. Using the ideas we're about to develop, it is nonetheless possible to study convergence, continuity, compactness, and other basic concepts of analysis in this much more general context. We'll see applications of these new techniques later on. Now we begin to develop the tools of analysis in a metric space. So definition, let X comma rho be a metric space. A sequence xj of elements of capital X is said to converge to a point alpha in X, if for each epsilon bigger than zero, there's a capital N bigger than zero, so that when j is bigger than N, then rho of xj alpha is less than epsilon. We call alpha the limit of the sequence xj, and we sometimes write xj right arrow alpha. Of course, this definition is completely analogous to the definition of convergence that you learned in the context of the reals. Just formulating it now, with rho being the distance instead of absolute value being the distance. So you should compare this definition of convergence with the corresponding definition on the real line that you learned last semester. Example, let x row be the metric space from the last example consisting of the continuous functions on the unit interval with the uniform metric. Let f be the sine x. That's certainly an element of the space, and so are the functions fj, which is summation l equal 0 to j minus 1 to the l, x to the 2l plus 1 divided by 2l plus 1 factorial. Observe that the functions fj are the partial sums for the Taylor series of sine x. And you can check from simple estimates on the error term of Taylor's theorem that the functions fj converge uniformly to f. Thus, in the language of metric spaces, fj converges to f in the metric space notion of convergence. So this is a really non-trivial example that you'll want to think about for a few moments to be sure you understand this new idea of convergence. Definition, let X row be a metric space. A sequence XJ of elements of X is said to be Cauchy if for each epsilon bigger than 0, there is a capital N bigger than 0, so that when J and K are both bigger than N, then row of XJ and XK is less than epsilon. So this, again, completely analogous to the notion of Cauchy sequence that you learned in the context of the reals. It's just that now we measure distance using a row. So the Cauchy criterion and convergence are connected in the expected fashion. Here's the proposition. Let xj be a convergent sequence with limit alpha in the metric space x row, then the sequence xj is Cauchy. So any convergent sequence is Cauchy, and the proof is pretty obvious. Let epsilon be bigger than 0. Choose capital N so large that if j is bigger than n, then rho of xj alpha is less than epsilon over 2. Now, if j and k are both bigger than capital N, then rho of xj xk by the triangle inequality is less than or equal to rho of xj alpha plus rho of alpha xk, which is less than epsilon over 2 plus epsilon over 2 equals epsilon, and therefore the sequence is Cauchy. The converse of the proposition is true in the real numbers with the usual metric. However, it is not true in every metric space. For example, the rationals Q with the usual metric rho of st is absolute s minus t is a metric space, but the sequence 3, 3.1, 3.141, 3.1415, 3.14159, etc., while certainly Cauchy, does not converge to a rational number. In fact, it converges to pi, because this is the decimal expansion for pi, and pi is irrational. So, you see, in the real numbers, or even in Rn, any Cauchy sequence is convergent, but in an arbitrary metric space, that's not true. So now we have a definition. We say that a metric space x, rho is complete if every Cauchy sequence converges to an element of the metric space. Thus, the real numbers with the usual metric form a complete metric space. The rational numbers, as we just saw, do not. Example, consider the metric space X row from the earlier example. It's consisting of continuous functions on the closed unit interval with the indicated metric function row, that is the uniform metric. If GJ is a Cauchy sequence in this metric space, then each GJ is a continuous function on the unit interval, and this sequence of continuous functions is Cauchy in the uniform sense. Therefore, they converge uniformly to a limit function g that must be continuous. Therefore, this particular metric space, the continuous functions with the uniform metric, is complete. That's a very important example, and one that you'll want to understand thoroughly. Consider the metric space consists of the polynomials taken to have domain the interval 0, 1 with the uniform distance as the metric. This metric space is not complete, for if h is any continuous function on the interval 0, 1 that is not a polynomial, say sine x, then the Weierstrass approximation theorem tells us there is a sequence pj of polynomials that converge uniformly on 0, 1 to h. So the sequence pj will be Cauchy in the metric space, but it does not converge to an element of the metric space. It converges to a function that's not a polynomial. Therefore, this metric space is not complete. If X row is a metric space, then an open ball with center P in X and radius R is the set BPR, which is the set of all X and X, where row of XP is less than R. The closed ball with center P and radius R is a set B, B bar PR, which is a set of all X and X where rho of XP is less than or equal to R. Definition. Let X rho be a metric space and E a subset of X. A point P in E is called an isolated point of E if there is an R bigger than 0, so that E intersect BPR is the singleton P. So P is isolated. If a point of E is not isolated, then it's called non-isolated. We see that the notion of isolated has intuitive appeal. An isolated point is one that is spaced apart, at least distance r, from the other points of the space. A non-isolated point, by contrast, has neighbors that are arbitrarily close. Definition. Let X rho be a metric space and F a function from X to the reals. If P in X is a non-isolated point and L in the reals, we say that the limit of F at P is L, and we write limit as x goes to p of f of x equals L. If for any epsilon bigger than 0, there is a delta bigger than 0, so that when the rho distance between x and p is bigger than 0 and less than delta, then fx minus L in absolute value is less than epsilon. Again, this is completely analogous to what you learned in calculus and in Math 4111, but now it's formulated in terms of metrics. Notice in this definition that we use rho to measure distance in x. That is the natural notion of distance with which x comes equipped, but we use absolute values to measure distance in r. The following lemma will prove useful. Let x, rho be a metric space and p and x be a non-isolated point. Let f be a function from x to the reals. Then the limit as x goes to p of f of x equals L, if and only if for every sequence xj contained in x, satisfying xj converges to p, it holds that fxj converges to f at p. So this is a standard interpretation of the limit concept using sequences, and we've seen this before also in Math 4111. Proof. This is straightforward and is treated in the exercises. Definition. Let x, rho be a metric space. Let E be a subset of x. Suppose that p is an element of E. We say that the function f from E to R is continuous at P if the limit as x goes to P of f of x equals f at P. Again, completely analogous to what you learned in calculus in Math 4111. Example. Let x rho be the space of continuous functions on the interval 0, 1 equipped with the supremum metric as usual. Define the function capital script f from x to r by the formula capital script x of f, capital script f of f equals the integral from 0 to 1 of f t dt. Then capital script f takes an element of x, namely a continuous function, to a real number, namely its integral. We claim that capital script f is continuous at every point of x. So fix a point f in capital X, if fj is a sequence of elements of capital X converging in the metric space sense to the limit f, then in the language of classical analysis, as we discussed earlier, the fj are continuous functions converging uniformly to the continuous function f on the interval 0, 1. But by an earlier theorem, it follows that the integral from 0 to 1 of fjt converges to the integral of f. This is the basic convergence theorem from Riemann integration. But this just says that capital script f of fj converges to capital script f of f. Using the lemma, we can conclude that the limit as g goes to f of capital script f of g equals capital script f of f, and therefore capital script f is continuous at little f. And since little f in x was chosen arbitrarily, we conclude that the function capital script f is continuous at every point of capital Roman X. In the next lecture, we shall develop some topological properties of metric spaces. Thank you for listening.